This is Rabbi Nathanael Braun, Congregation Brothers of Israel, Long Branch, New Jersey. Recording for Wednesday, May 10th, 2017, with the last two Mishnayos, 11 and 12 in the fourth chapter of Mishnah Edios, and the first in the fifth chapter. Hopefully this will be smoother and simpler than yesterday. Okay, the first Mishnah actually is, right, good Mishnah, hopefully easy to understand. Yud Aleph. And again, totally different topic. The only linkage is the Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. Misha Nadar Nezirus Meruba. Right, so somebody has a number of, right, takes a vow to be a Nazir for many periods of Nezirus. We're familiar from the Bible of lifelong Nazirs, Shimshon and Shmuel, but a regular period of Nezirus was only 30 days. So if I swore to become a Nazir, without, you know, defining a time period, so it would only be for 30 days. So let's say I said, I'm going to take upon myself four periods of Nezirus. V'hishlim Niziruso. And I finished them. I did 120 days. V'achar kach bar la'aretz. So this was somebody who was obviously outside of Israel, in Gullus, diaspora. And then they went to Israel. Now there is a rabbinic decree that basically assumes that every land outside of Israel is tamei, is impure, and Nazir, right, the Nazirite, is not allowed to become impure. So the question is, so there was a rabbinic issue that if you were a Nazir outside of Israel and then you went to Israel, you'd have to repeat your Nazirus in a place that is certainly pure. So you finished, right, you completed your vow in the diaspora. Now you come to Israel. Beis Shammai omrim Nazir shloshim yom. Beis Shammai says, okay, all you have to do is 30 days. It's a rabbinic decree, blah, blah, this, whatever it is. You come to Israel, 30 days. Beis Hillel omrim nazir batchila. Beis Hillel says, whatever you vowed to do outside of Israel, you have to do in Israel. So in our case, you'd have to do all 120 days. Another argument between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Misha hayishneki te'edem me'idinoso. Me'idososo. Right, there are two different sets of witnesses testifying about to how long did this person vow to become a Nazir. Elu me'idin shenazir shtayim. One set said, we heard him, take a vow to do two periods of Nazirus, 60 days. Ve'elu me'idin oso shenazir chamesh. No, the other set of witnesses says, we heard five, right, periods of Nazirus, which is 150 days. So what do you do when you have two competing and conflicting sets of witnesses? So Beis Shammai omrim nechleka ha'edus ve'en kan nezirus. Beis Shammai says, there's a split, there's an argument in the testimony, therefore the whole thing's a wash. There's no nezirus at all. We chuck them both, and we start from zero, which is nothing. Beis Hillel omrim yesh bichlal chamesh shtayim shiyehei nazir shtayim. That period is in the wrong place. Sometimes the punctuation in Sefari is bad. But yesh bichlal chamesh shtayim, that two is included in five. So both sets agree, say Hillel, right, Beis Hillel, that both agree to the number two. And therefore, this Nazir would have to do two periods of Nazirus. Okay. Mishnah Yud Bet 12. So just a second of background, right? You have a portico, but a portico, which is a sadak, is basically a structure that's outside. It's open on three walls, but it has a roof. That would be sufficient to be an ohel for if there was some impurity under it, right? Let's say a sheretz or a dead body, and you walked under it, so you would become tame. Right? That's tumas ohel. That is the tuma of a tent. But this particular case is, there is a sadak. Sorry, the sadak is actually the break, the split. So you're in a portico, and in this particular case, there is a split straight down the roof, right? And it goes all the way from one side to the other. So now you basically have two structures. And if there is a corpse or sheretz or whatever on one side, and you're standing on the other side of the crack in the roof, there's only, as opposed to being one structure, there's now two, and there's a separation. So You would not become impure if you were on the other side of the crack from the item that is tamei. So that's everyone agrees to. Everyone also agrees that if you put something above the crack covering it, that would serve to unite the roof. And anyone under the either side of the roof would become tamei. The question here is, let's say a person is lying on the ground under the crack. So you're now on the floor directly beneath the crack. I don't know why it has dead in brackets in the English. Neither the Kahati nor the Bartanura reads the Mishnah this way. So I am going to read the Mishnah with the Kahati and the Bartanura against the English here of Sefaria. And the question is as follows. Certainly if you put something right above the crack, that would unite it. What if you were to have a live person lying down under the crack, and there was on one side an item of impurity, and on the other side there was, you know, some people? Would the person lying down on the floor serve to bridge the gap and unite the two halves? So Beis Shammai says, no, eno mevias hatuma. It won't bring the tumah from one side to the other. Doesn't work. Beis Hillel omerim adam chalol hu. Beis Hillel says, no, a person is hollow, even though we actually have guts inside of us. Right? You see the skeletal structure and the skin as one piece, and the kishkas as another piece. That's an apology right now to all the doctors for not being more medically, technically sound. All right, but the bones and the skin are one. The kishkas are something else, and therefore we see it as a hollow item. V'hatzad ha'elyon maybe as hatuma. The outer structure serves as like an its own ohel, as it were, and everybody agrees that if you had a smaller object, a smaller like tent, beneath the crack, that would actually, you know, go up halachically and serve to bridge the two halves. And Beis Hillel says we see a person in a similar way. Because the person is hollow, it's as if that, like, you know, the person becomes the tent, if you will. Strange, I know it sounds strange, but that's halachically kind of how it works. And that little tent / person is enough to bring the two halves together. Probably not a case that we will come across practically at any point in our lives. That would be my bet. But interesting how we view the human body and separation between the skin and the kishka. So that is certainly conceptually interesting. Perek Hey Mishnah Aleph, Rabbi Yehuda Omar, Shisha Dvarim Mikule Beis Shammai Umechumre Beis Hillel. All right, here are six things which are from where Beis Shammai is lenient and Beis Hillel is strict. Usually we know it is the opposite. Right, and here we go. Dam Nevelos. Right, the blood of a Nevela. Nevela is an animal that is improperly slaughtered or killed without slaughter. Right, a Trefa is an animal with a fatal defect. Hole in the heart, hole in the lungs, whatever, there's a whole list. Even if you shechted a Trefa properly, it would still not be kosher. And that's actually where the word treif comes from. A nevela is an animal that was healthy, right? No fatal flaws, but you didn't shecht it or you didn't shecht it properly, right? If you went hunting, each of those animals becomes a nevela because you shot it in the head with your crossbow and you killed it, but you didn't shecht it. That's a nevela. Nevela, now what about the blood that comes out of a nevela? So Beis Shammai mitamim. Beis Shammai says that blood is tahor. Beis Hillel mitamim. Beis Hillel says it's tamei. Right? The argument for tuma is clearly a stringency, whereas saying it's tahor is a leniency because it won't make you impure. And that is number one of the kule Beis Shammai, where Beis Shammai is lenient and Beis Hillel is stringent as machmir. Number two, beitzas hanavela. Right, so now obviously this is not a cow because cows don't lay eggs, but you have a bird which is not shechted properly, and there is an egg from the bird. Right, what about that? Right, is that right? The question is the stuff? I know it's very technical again. The items that come out of the nevela? Will they have the same impurity as level as the nevela? So beitzas hanevela. So im yesh ki yotze bizenim keres bashuk muteres. So Beis Shammai is going to say, if it was already, if it's like the one sold in the market, i.e., it has a hard shell, muteres, right? So Beis Shammai says that's okay, right? It must have been formed before it was the animal was killed improperly. The moment it was formed, it was totally fine, so it's good. Ve'im la basura, but if not, you can't eat it because then it becomes like a part of the nevela. Right, nevela you can't eat, an improperly shechted bird you can't eat, so you can't eat the egg, which is a part of it. Right, Beis Shammai says you have to see if the shell is formed. We assumed it was formed before the animal was slaughtered. You can have it. Right, it's a separate item. If not, if the shell is not fully formed, it's still a part of the animal, and you may not eat it. K'divrei Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel Osrim. Beis Hillel says, no, in both cases, no matter what, whether the egg is fully formed, shell is fully formed or not, you may not eat it. It is considered part of the nevela. And that, of course, is a stringency because we're not allowing you to eat it. Beis Shammai, at least in the case where the shell was formed, is allowing you to have it. That is a leniency. Umodim bebeisas trefa shehi asura. But everybody agrees, even Beis Shammai agrees, that the egg of a trefa, right? The trefa is the animal with the fatal defect, which was never possibly kosher. Shehi asura. Everyone agrees that the egg of the trefa you may not eat. Mipnei shegdela beisur, because that was born out of isur. Even when the egg was formed, it was formed in the animal, in the bird, which was a trefa. So it's a trefa egg that was grown in a prohibited, space item, and therefore no good. Okay. Next. Dam nachris v'dam tahara shel mitzoras. Right? So the blood of a woman, right? Menstrual blood is certainly renders one impure. That's the laws of Nida. But that is generally, right? Certainly from the Torah, only for Jewish women. Right? If you had somehow came across another, I guess maybe a Kohen doctor, but most of us, right, will not come across menstrual blood of a non-Jewish woman. Right? Dam nachris, v'dam tahara shel mitzoras. If you have the menstrual blood of a non-Jewish woman, or the dam tahara is after a woman gives birth, there is blood that is pure, there's dam tahara, but it happens to be that there was a mitzoras, a leprous woman who had given birth. Right, so do we focus on the leprosy or focus just on the pregnancy? So Beis Shammai mitarin. Beis Shammai says Gentile menstrual blood and post-birth blood of a leprous woman, they're tahor. Because just like every other woman who's given birth, it's tahor. And right, the Torah says it's a Jewish woman, not a non-Jewish woman. Ubeis Hillel omrim kiroka ukimei me regleha. Beis Hillel says that the menstrual blood of a Gentile woman is like her spit and her urine. Now that everybody agrees is actually has some level of impurity. But what Beis Hillel is saying is, A, it is tameh, it is impure. The menstrual blood of a Gentile is impure, like the spit and the urine. But there is some leniency in there. That it's in the same category only when it's in its liquid form, not if it dries and congeals. Menstrual blood of a Jewish woman would actually render, would transmit impurity, would transmit tumah, even when it is congealed or dried. Okay, moving on. Ochlin peros shvi'is betova v'shelo betova. K'divrei Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says when you go into like the field on a sabbatical year, a Shemitah year, so everything is hefker. The land is ownerless, and anyone can come and take. So Beis Shammai says you can come betova with giving thanks, shelo betova without giving thanks, right? If you want to say thank you to the owner of the field, right? So good, God bless you. And if you don't, because you're allowed to come and take whatever you want. Beis Hillel omrim, Beis Hillel says no. Ein ochlin ela betova. No, you're only allowed to go. You're allowed to go, but you have to say thank you. Now, why does Beis Hillel say that? Because Beis Hillel agrees that on the Shemitah year, the produce is, it doesn't belong to the owner. Anyone can come and take it. No questions asked. But they don't want you to become used to going into somebody else's field and taking stuff without permission. That's not something we want you to become used to have any experience in. So Ms. Hillel says, just say thank you. Take whatever you want, but say thank you so that the next year you'll understand that you can't go into somebody's field, and take stuff without permission. That's an interesting argument. I think there we might see Shammai's point more, but I think we hear the position of Ms. Hillel as well. Last for today, end of our learning, Hachamas. Chamatz, not Hamas, but Chamatz, which is a water skin, which is a piece of leather. Right? All these fancy English words are confusing. It is a leather canteen, right? They didn't have plastic back in the day, and right, probably for some old movies you've seen them, the old Westerns, they would have leather canteens. That certainly becomes a item. It becomes a vessel, a kli, and it will become right, susceptible to tumah. What happens if you poke a hole in it, right? So if you poke a hole in it, a leather canteen with a hole in it is not a canteen. It doesn't work. It will not be mekabel tuma, will not be susceptible to tuma because it's no longer a vessel. You've destroyed it, right? You poke a hole in a water pitcher, it ain't a water pitcher. So Beis Shammai omerim terura omedes. Beis Shammai says, right, and this is a kula, this is a leniency, the only time that it becomes susceptible to tumah again is when it is restored to its original state. It is as strong as it once was. You patched a hole, you tied it up, you untied it. Here, tied and upright means it's as strong as it was before. Beis Hillel, afa pishena trura, right? Even if it's not as strong as it was before, as long as it holds water, it's sufficient, right? What does it take to bring it back to a position of being susceptible to tumah, to impurity? Beis Shammai says you have to restore it to its original state. Beis Hillel says, no, I have a lesser standard, a lower standard, which is, it has to be functional. And that lower standard makes it easier for it to be susceptible to tumah, which is why it is a stringency. That concludes our learning for today. Please come back. Join me tomorrow.